You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
We're talking about family finances today. Budgeting, saving, spending, all those things that worry us and maybe put us at odds with our parenting partner. Stay tuned. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-host, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being our listeners, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. Family finances can be a contentious topic for many families. There are lots of ways to approach family finances. Here's a few approaches that I took in my early days of marriage and family, which might sound familiar to you. Bury your head in the sand and don't think about money until circumstances force you to. Or meet with your hubby and create a budget, which lasts just about as long as a New Year's resolution. Or think, I can't do the math, so how can I possibly know how much to save and how much to spend? Or, and full disclosure, this was a major factor in my own divorce, be on different pages about money so that you can argue about the same things over and over again. I spend too much, he says. He saves too much, I say. So enter Carly Hill, the debt-free mom. She is the mom of four and has been helping families budget and save since 2017. What I want to know, Carly, is where were you 40 years ago?
Well, I was just a thought at the time, but I am here now and I'm happy to be here.
So great to have you, and looking forward to this conversation about budgeting and finances. So always, I'm curious, like, how did you get into this department?
Yeah, so I have a very roundabout way of arriving at doing this for my job now. So in college, my very first year, I thought for sure I wanted to be an accountant. I went to the University of Illinois as a freshman in their College of Business, which is a very big, very competitive college of business. I thought for sure, like, you know, this was my path. This is what I was doing. Lo and behold, 1 year there, I was like, I love accounting and I love numbers. I don't know if this is the crew that is for me, if this is the school that is for me. I envisioned myself being a mom and honestly being a stay-at-home mom in my adulthood. And so I wanted to study accounting in a way that could fit well into a family life as well. And I very quickly realized I was at a school where when they showed up, they knew what big accounting firm they wanted to be at and what partner track they wanted to be on. So I was just kind of in a group that had a different vision for their life than I did. And so during my freshman year, even though I was declared as an accounting major, I went and met with advisors who are for students who are undeclared and kind of said, hey, I feel more undeclared right now. I feel like I'm changing my mind. I figured out, I kind of talked to her about different career paths. My youngest brother has Down syndrome. I'm the oldest of five, and my youngest brother has Down syndrome. So she was kind of talking me through different interests, different life experiences. And I actually landed on special education as the thing that I wanted to switch to. So I ended up transferring from the University of Illinois to Illinois State University because they're very well known for their teaching school. Took that path, fully, you know, kind of immersed myself in the teaching world instead. So what I ended up studying was how to take students who need to learn really important things that will impact their life and help them learn it in a way that is not what works for everyone, but is in a way that works for them, by making it motivational, by making it clear, by making it something that they're interested in. And that's what I did with elementary students for a couple years.
I think I see how you're going to pull this back to accounting and money.
Yes, and money. Yes. So I actually love that I had that 1 year where I studied accounting and loved the numbers, but didn't love the career path, because now, as a stay-at-home mom, I was not in the teaching world anymore, but I wanted to use my brain in a different way. I became a stay-at-home mom, which was my dream. But then I was like, I love, you know, numbers and puzzles, and I'm really a thinker, an internal thinker. And I was like, I just need a little more balance in my life outside of the diapers and the, you know, the play dates and the nap schedules and all that stuff. So what I did was start an Instagram account for family finances, because I was really passionate about figuring out ways for, if moms were interested in having a different work schedule than they currently had, and they felt like finances were the one thing holding them back, I was like, I can help those women. I can talk to those women. I am a huge advocate of women working. I work right now pretty much full time. My niche was not in trying to make everyone be a stay-at-home mom. It was in the moms who wanted to have a different work schedule, but felt like what they wanted was not achievable because of finances.
You know, such a good point. I'm thinking about accountants, and I'm thinking about the big accounting firms. I have a brother who is an accountant, right? And I mean, even as a guy, at a certain point, he's like, this doesn't fit my family life.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, accountants, financial advice, super important for businesses. And parents, women, moms, people who don't own big companies also need financial advice. It's not as available.
Yes. And that's what I was finding too at the time. So I just had my third baby when I became fully a stay-at-home mom. I had a few part-time jobs. And what I was finding was there is all kinds of financial advice, and people go after you when you have a lot of wealth. How to make it even better, how to grow it even larger. But there wasn't a lot of advice for the people who didn't yet have the wealth. Like I was just finding, where was the advice for kind of the small
Most
money
of us.
Question?
Most yeah. of us.
Yes. The day-to-day stuff of how do I make the little money choices that I'm making, you know, as I'm going to Target and as I'm ordering groceries, how does that actually fit in the bigger picture of being able to even get to the point where I would then later need a financial advisor? So that's what I did. And what I found was so well blended was my personal interest in numbers and money, combined with my training as a teacher who could say, this is a skill that's very important to everyone. Some people have more trouble with it than others. What I am now skilled in is saying, I think this is important for you, so I'm going to find an unconventional way to make this interesting to you so that you can find success. Because that's what special education was all about, was saying the broad path that works for most people isn't working for my student, and I care about my student. So I'm going to find a way to teach them this skill because I think they need it. And now that's what I do with budgeting too, is that some people just say, like you said at the beginning, Janet, I would rather ignore it, right? I would rather not even look at my money, talk about my money, because it's just too overwhelming. And that's a feeling I'm super familiar with. I'm recognizing that feeling, and I'm saying, hey, I know how to make this something that is broken down into pieces that feel manageable, that motivates you, and that can even possibly feel fun.
Wow. Fun.
That
money?
Seems a bit much, but I'm willing to listen.
Yes.
I like a challenge.
Yeah. And before we kind of dive in really into that aspect, I will also want to acknowledge, like, I don't know about you, Jen, but my parents never talked about money. Not a subject that we ever heard. I mean, I remember my mom balancing her checkbook. That was always like, I'm going to balance it to the penny. That was it as far as money in my family.
Another thing that we need to acknowledge is that even if we had conversations about money, right now is radically different from then. My dad was able to get a loan for his business by calling up a banker in our small town on a Saturday after hours and doing like a handshake promise thing, right? So what he thinks about how things should work just does not work in today's world. So even if you may have gotten some budgeting lessons or money, whatever you learned might not work in today's environment. Is that mm-hmm. something you see as well, Carly?
Yeah, for sure. Especially because we assume, you know, our parents are older and wiser and more experienced than us. And so what they advise us to do is wise and is what we should do. But like you said, unlike parenting, you know, there's some timeless parenting truths where it's like, yes, I listen to my mom about babies and parenting and stuff because she raised five kids and the human baby does not change, you know, from 20 right. years ago to now. But it, unlike parenting, it is the environment in which we are managing our finances is radically different from even 15, 20 years ago, yeah. let alone talking about, you know, someone who was, you know, a post-World War II where, you know, like those, that mentality of like, you should have your savings in cash and it should be under your mattress and, you know, all those kind of things that trickles down and it just doesn't apply, but we feel like it should. And so sometimes we get yeah. stuck taking, you know, 1970 advice and trying to apply it to a 2024 financial world.
I feel like the one piece of financial advice that perhaps has remained the same, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, this general principle of spending less than you make, generally speaking, that seems sound. And I believe that's where this idea of budgeting comes in to help us
yes,
with that.
Yes. I call this the gap between our income and expenses. And we really have to be familiar with what it is, how much it is, and what we're going to do with it. Because any financial goal that we have, no matter what it is, no matter what the timeline is, it's all going to be driven by the gap between our income and our expenses. Whatever our set expenses are and whatever our income is, whatever larger goal we have happens by using the gap between our income and expenses. So yes, that is certainly I would call that a timeless financial principle of you have to have something left over because that's the only way to make forward momentum. We can't make forward momentum with money we don't have when we owe people more than we're bringing in.
And it just got challenging, right, Janet?
Yeah. I'm thinking about our listeners as I always do, like how is this landing for them? And I can imagine maybe a little elevated heart rate.
Are you kidding? For
sure. Just a little bit.
I'm thinking about myself. I mean, I'm going to be 100% real and honest. Listeners, longtime listeners, you know I'm not raising little kids anymore. Big kids eat a lot of food, number one. Groceries have gone up tremendously. I used mm-hmm. to be able to get out of the grocery store. Like, I could buy a lot of groceries for $100. I am routinely hitting $300 mm-hmm. now. I mean,
it is totally a myth that kids are expensive when they're, you know, they're like, oh, you know, once we get out of diapers, once we get out of formula, it'll all get so much more affordable. And my oldest is only 9 and I'm already looking at, you know, the moms who have the babies. And I'm like, no, it doesn't get more affordable when they get older. It gets more expensive.
Yes. Yeah. So how do we do this when we can all very easily see like mm-hmm. the expenses aren't stopping and yep. most of us, like the income is not increasing commensurate to the expenses. Where do we start?
Yeah. So one of the most important things is to think about our perspective. So when we start to get overwhelmed, our brain naturally goes really far and wide. We start thinking about all the things we've done in the past that now we're like, oh, maybe that was a mistake. And we also start thinking way into the future. So what I see when I recognize that someone is overwhelmed to an unhelpful point is when they start mentioning things that happened a long time ago and also start mentioning things that are 30 years from now, where they're like, well, I'm 27. How am I supposed to retire? And I'm like, that's, you know, a far way away. So what we want to do first, if for people who are feeling overwhelmed, is we really have to ground ourselves in reality in a short window. We need to really bring our scope in. So one of the first things I say is we have to, and this is borrowed from honestly a therapy principle, is we have to radically accept what already happened. So I cannot go back and unborrow the money that I borrowed, right? I cannot go back and go to a different college. So we're going to radically accept whatever the numbers are. And part of that is the painful but very brief task of looking at our real numbers. What do I actually have in savings? What do I actually owe on my car, on my student loans? What are those real numbers? Because a lot of times, so that is part of that radical acceptance. And a lot of times it actually ends up being a lot less negative than we think it is. Because again, just like our brains like to go in this perspective of way in the past and way in the future when we're overwhelmed, it also likes to do a really bad job of estimating. So what happens is we're like, oh, my finances are terrible. I got to go get a part-time job. It's so overwhelming. It's too much. And we have no actual numbers to know what is the actual deficit that we're working at? What are the actual payments? And a lot of times when we can ground ourselves back in reality and say, number one, I'm going to radically accept what already happened because it's wasted energy to wish that something different had happened in the past. And number two, I'm going to become fully aware of what those actual numbers are because I can only solve real problems. I can't solve problems that I perceive, but I can solve real problems. And so that's one of the big things I help people do is say, you know, I'm going to come alongside you and we're going to look at your real numbers because I can help you, but I can't help you with imaginary numbers. So we're first going to look at the real numbers.
Janet, how familiar does this sound? We are not financial experts. Don't make any claim to be. But how many times have we told our overwhelmed moms who are forward projecting to, my son is going to be on the couch. He's going to be a loser in my basement because he didn't turn in his homework in fifth grade. It's the same thing. And we tell them the same thing. Whoa, 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 whoa. Don't do that. Come back here. Deal with now.
Good advice so far, dealing with the here and now. More advice to come after these messages from our sponsors. As Mother's Day is coming around, I find I'm missing my mom more and more. And there's always questions and stories I wish I had asked her when she was still here. I do remember that I gave her a book once upon a time with questions for her to write the answers to. And bless her heart, she didn't answer very many. So that was really a disappointment. But fast forward to now and technology. And now we have MyLifeInABook.com. It takes all those questions and stories and it puts it in a format that is sent to your person, whoever you designate, on a regular basis so that the prompts come, they're easily answered either written or voice to text, and they're captured by MyLifeInABook.com. These family stories, this legacy that you want to leave for your children and your grandchildren. MyLifeInABook.com, create an unforgettable gift for your mom, your dad, your children this Mother's Day. Use our coupon code ONBOYS for 10% off. Go to MyLifeInABook.com and use ONBOYS for 10% off. Create that legacy. Carry on those stories.
We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet. But a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten easy melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve. And I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin now.
Yeah, no. And they taste good. And they're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys.
It's so true, because I mean, unfortunately, part of that, you know, that is self-preservation. That is something that is hardwired in our brain in a good way to kind of survive, basically.
Yeah.
But what happens is we then, if we get in that mode for a very short amount of time, we have that survival adrenaline. But then if we don't learn to turn it off, then we start applying that to things it doesn't need to be applied to. And so in that overwhelming sense of my finances feel out of control, I'm going to try to safeguard myself by blinders on to whatever's currently happening while simultaneously thinking about 3 decades from now. We just send ourselves into a tailspin, and it really is counteractive to any sort of problem solving that we would be able to come up with.
A lot of wasted energy. Wasted emotion. You lose sleep, Janet. I know you can relate to this. I see it on your face.
And, you know, beating ourselves up for, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that, or I spent that, or so. I love your perspective of like, let that go. That money's already spent, and start right here and now.
Yes, for sure. And it's just so helpful sometimes. And, you know, I think in theory, we all kind of know that. And especially women are very good at telling other women that, you know, if they see a friend who's doing that, they're like, let it go. It's okay. But then they look at their own stuff and they don't apply that same principle to themselves. Mm-hmm. And so if we can just turn that same message back onto ourselves and say, what already happened, happened. And so I'm going to move forward. You know, think of ourselves as a friend of our own mind instead of just a friend to other women, and say, what do I need to hear right now so that I can actually move forward? Because like you said, what has happened has happened. And, you know, if I had a friend who was, you know, came to me and was super upset about something that happened 10 years ago, that's what we would all say, right? We would say, it's in the past, let's move forward. And so we need to apply that to ourselves as well.
So I'm going to guess the first step, of course, is figuring out what you've got in savings, debt, all of that. And I'm going to guess putting this on a spreadsheet is the best way to go about it.
So there's lots of different ways.
Yeah, you lost me already on spreadsheet. There's no way I'm doing this with spreadsheet, Carly.
Exactly, Jen. My eyes are glazing over spreadsheet.
There are lots of different ways. So this kind of goes back to that idea that I had said with my training in special education. What we did was we never held any method tightly. It didn't matter what the method was. It mattered what the outcome was.
Yes.
So I didn't care what book I used. I didn't care if my kid was standing, laying down, sitting on a bouncy ball. I didn't care the method, as long as we arrived at the goal we were trying to achieve. So I don't care what the budget is. I don't care if it's on, you know, a pink pad of paper that's magnet on your fridge. I don't care if it's a spreadsheet, if it's an app. That's not the thing. So another thing I like to say when people say, I don't like budgeting, I often tell them, I don't really like budgeting either, because a budget is not something we do for the sake of budgeting. There's no prize just for budgeting. A budget is a tool to achieve some other goal. So I don't think everybody should budget just so that they can say, I'm on a budget. A budget is simply a plan, a way to arrive at an outcome that is not going to happen by accident.
I so like that plan idea, because in our culture especially, budget and diet have very similar connotations, right?
Yep.
And it's what I can't have, what I can't do. But if I have a training plan, because I want to run a marathon or do a try, or I want to write a book. I mean, whatever. A plan is more about what I do to get where I want to go.
Yep. And so I mean, if people have a hang up on that word, scrap the word. Do not call it a budget. Call it a money plan. Because as soon as we ask that, you know, if I asked anybody, should you wing it with your finances or should you plan it out in advance? Everybody would say, oh, you should plan it, right? Yeah. You should have a plan. Just like, you know, as moms, like we're excellent at planning out, like before we go on a vacation, we have lists for everything and we have a suitcase for everything. And we're not just going to like go about our normal life for a week and then wake up at 5 a.m. and leave for Disney World. Right? Like we're not going to do that because that would stress us, right? We would want to have a plan. We're like, no, we need a plan. I need to think about it in advance. I can't just wing it. I'm going to forget something. And so we just need to apply that same kind of, the more I plan in advance, the better the outcome is. We need to apply that same thing to our money. So So back to your question, Janet, about what do we do after we become aware of what's in our finances? What I don't actually want people to do is jump into making a budget, because what we do is we swing from one extreme to another. So we go from, I have no idea what's going on with my money, to my money feels terrible, my payments feel high, I'm going to put myself on a budget, which means most people, when they say that, they mean I'm going to cut out everything fun. And like you said at the very beginning, very top of the episode, it lasts about as long as a New Year's resolution does. So what we instead want to do is ask ourselves, what am I trying to achieve? What is the actual purpose of this budget? What goal am I trying to move forward that hasn't yet happened because I was not planning ahead? And what can I do so that I can achieve those goals? So there's a few goals that I always recommend to put in order and have people apply to their own situation. This is not going to perfectly fit into everybody's mold of what their situation is, but this is a general framework. So number one, and this is a goal people often skip over and assume is happening, I make goal number one, consistently spend less than you make. So a lot of times, if you read a book about money, if you look up, if you Google, what should I be doing with my money? All of those resources are assuming that you have extra money to use. So they're going to tell you things like, they're going to be like, you know, save a month of expenses and pay off your debt and buy a car in cash and pay for a house. And all of those goals are assuming that there is already a positive gap between our income and expenses and that we know how to use it. So I like to take a step back. We can call it step zero if we want to, but we have to be consistently spending less than we make in order to achieve any of the goals after that. So sometimes that is something that people just need permission to do. I need permission to not try to put money in savings, to not try to pay off my debt, to take 3 to 6 months just to figure out how to consistently spend less than I make and have that be the only thing I'm focused on. So that is always what I tell people as goal number one, which again, is just permission to slow down. We don't need to go from one extreme to another of, you know, somehow magically I'm going to go from overspending $1,000 a month to next month putting $1,000 in savings. Well, what's the A to B of that? Like, how is that going to happen?
So here's where goal one gets challenging for a lot of people. You know, yes, spend less than you make. And then you run into this often ubiquitous, stupid advice, just stop getting a Starbucks every day on the way to work. And you're like, I don't drink Starbucks. I'm not having my $7 coffee. I'm already, you know.
Yeah.
So how do you help people figure that part out if that's a struggle?
Yeah, for sure. So one thing to think about it's the pursuit of growing the gap between our income and expenses, right? One thing to think about in that is our circle of influence. So this is Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. We have things that are inside our circle of influence and things that are outside our circle of influence. So a lot of people, especially women, spend a lot of time talking about expense-related things that are outside their circle of influence, like the cost of groceries.
Groceries.
So we can control to a certain extent our meal planning and which snacks we buy and things like that to a certain extent, but I cannot decide what the prices are at Aldi. And I also can't decide if they're going to go up or down next week. So that is outside of my circle of influence. So that is another thing, that radical acceptance of there are things I can control, like how much I'm, you know, how quick I am to press buy now on Amazon. I can control if I'm going to buy my kids' clothing used or new. I can control if the couch is actually broken and needs to be replaced, or if I'm just discontent with it. Yeah. Those are things I can control, and I need to focus on what's inside my circle of influence, not what's outside. And so that's another thing that when we talk about growing the gap between our income and expenses, another thing is, you know, right now with inflation, the rate of inflation has slowed down, but expenses are not coming down. Mm-hmm. And so
frustrating. I saw that story too. I'm like, really?
Yep. And that, I think that's a misconception. When people say inflation is slowing down, they assume that means prices are coming down. That's not what that means. So inflation is how quickly the prices are going up. So if they say inflation is coming down, it's like going from 50 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour. The rate of the prices going up has slowed down. But that's different than the prices coming down. But what that means is, I know in my family, like, we've had to accept that that is going to be a reality in the short term, and I cannot control the economy of the United States. So what can I control? Can I increase my income through an extra part-time job? That is something that has been, I know people are super resistant to that. In a very short window of time, working a little bit extra for a short window of time can completely change the entire trajectory of your finances for the rest of your life. I've experienced that in spades in my life. And that's inside of my circle of influence, right? I've done that when I had, you know, when I had babies, when I didn't have babies. My husband has worked a full-time job with a part-time job on the side in order to get us to a point where now neither of us work 40 hours a week because we've built this, we've specifically had a goal in mind. But at the same time, we know that none of that is permanent. So right now we don't work 40 hours a week. If inflation kept going, we would have to shift because inflation's outside of my circle of influence, but how I work and where I work is inside of my circle of influence. And we might need to change some of those things. So for people who are feeling like there is no gap between my income and expenses, and I feel stuck in terms of I can't make expenses go down and I can't make income go up, we're often less stuck than we feel like we are, but sometimes we're too close to our own situation to see an alternative path. Mm-hmm. And I know that happens in parenting all the time, right? We're like, mm-hmm. won't do what I want him to do. And there's no other option. I have to yell at him or I have mm-hmm. to take away his Nintendo Switch, right? And you guys know as experts with outside perspective, when we're not emotionally attached to that situation, we can usually come up with a few other alternatives that the person who's just too close to it can't see. And it's not their fault. I mean, that's what we all experience, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I try to help people with is, okay, you don't feel like there is a way to increase income or decrease expenses, but I would love to offer you some alternatives to at least think of, at least have it on the table and have a conversation about it. Because sometimes we're just too close to our own situation to identify what those alternative better options might be.
Are you already thinking about your plan? More on that after these messages from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk. And ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only US-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast. And it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer and additional terms and conditions may apply.
We talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series, Talk with Boys Like a Pro, about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions, and that is truly where the gold is.
We will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys and all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun.
Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys. And get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us.
I like what you said too about, you know, you're talking about you and your husband, and you each did do some part-time jobs for a while, for a time.
Yep.
When you look at this as a plan, it's not, I can never do this again, or I need to always do this. You're talking about deliberately choosing and implementing strategies for now, for a period of time that makes sense to get somewhere. Then you reevaluate.
Right. Right. And one of the best things to do when you're talking about temporarily changing something, there's two things. Number one, I'm sure people have heard this before, but it's the idea of choose your hard, right? Like, it is hard to be in debt and be scared about how you're going to pay, make those payments. It's hard to have a collections letter come in your mailbox. It's hard to have to tell your kids we're not going on vacation. So those things aren't easy. Those things are hard. So it is hard to add some extra hours, do one overtime shift a week. It is hard to start saying no to things you said yes to, but it's not that. I think we falsely have this idea that one side is easy and one side is hard, and I'm sad that I have to choose the hard option. They're actually both hard, but one of them produces a benefit in the future, and one of them actually makes the future even harder.
That's a lot to think about.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think, you know, that, and that is definitely, that's a swimming upstream mentality from what much of, especially much of the Western world believes right now. We think run away from hard. If it is difficult, walk away, quit the job that doesn't bring you happiness. Like, you, those are some things that are big themes. And what I like to do, especially for those part-time jobs, I mean, I think about the part-time jobs I did while having kids. I was an administrative assistant for a very short period of time. I tutored for a while. I cleaned houses. Cleaning houses is absolutely not and never going to be my passion in life, right? But it opened some big, big doors that were closed if I did not do that. And so I think seeing, just like having to let go of the word budget and instead see it as a tool, sometimes we can see these things that are temporarily difficult as a tool. Say, I'm going to use this thing that I don't temporarily love in order to open a big door that I am interested in. And when we start to see what we're gaining by temporarily doing something we don't love, it becomes a lot easier to do. You know, it becomes, so having those clear goals and clear incentives is very, very important. That's why I said, do not budget for the sake of budgeting, because no one's going to do that long-term because it has no internal incentive behind it at all.
Yeah.
It only feels difficult. But if we instead say, okay, my goals are to save up a month of expenses so that every time a unexpected expense happens, it's an inconvenience instead of a crisis. That's something that people are interested in, right? Like, as soon as we talk in those terms, it's like, ooh, I'm interested. I want that. I want the dead car battery to be an inconvenience, not a crisis, right? And so it's like the means to get there is having enough in savings that we can handle that. And then we say, I don't want all of my hard-earned take-home pay to keep going to all of these debt payments and all this interest. The bank is making more money off of my salary than I am. We say, okay, I agree. You want that. Let's make a plan to pay off your debt so that you keep your paycheck. You earned your paycheck. Let's not let the bank profit at 24% interest off of your job. Let's have you profit off of your job. People want that. And so we say the means to get there is to come up with a plan for paying off the debt. So it's, we definitely have to leverage the idea of incentive. Why am I doing this? What is the actual long-term reason? And once we clarify why we're doing it and keep it in our minds, I mean, I tell people, I'm like, if you really, really, really don't like the idea of having debt, but you're also not interested, you're like, the idea of making extra payments on my debt feels even worse. Come up with an incentive. Like, when I pay off my credit card debt, we're going to pause doing any extra goals and we're going to go on a vacation. Decide what that vacation is. decide where you're going, put that picture as your background on your phone, and then have this physical reminder of the reason that you're doing something. And those temporarily difficult tasks become a lot easier to swallow, I guess.
So the big challenge, Janet, I know you've experienced this. Families typically include more than one person.
Mm-hmm. And they're usually different.
And so it's one thing if I decide I'm going to tackle this. Here's my goal. You add in even one other person, and how does that go, Janet?
Well, I've been divorced for 15 years because it didn't go well.
Yep. And it's one of the number one reasons, you know, finances are listed as one of the top reasons that people get divorced. Mm-hmm. So in a home, every adult needs independence and incentive inside of their finances. And those two things are going to look different for different adults. So I'll say it again, independence, something that is not attached to the other adult, and incentive, something that is motivating to them, that gives them the drive to do some of these things that are less interesting. And they're not going to be the same for each person. So generally speaking, opposites do tend to attract. So in a couple that's managing joint finances, there tends to be a more saving.
And I want to be clear there for a minute, because this joint finances thing is a term that can get some people. Even if you do not have joint bank accounts, you don't have all your money in joint bank accounts. If you are connected, whether you're sharing a house, an apartment, or children, it's joint. What's happening to you is affecting the other
person. Right. Because even if people don't have joint bank accounts, reason they don't have that is because they have some sort of arrangement about how they're splitting the finances, how they're dividing the bills. And that's still a joint arrangement, right? That's still a mutual decision about how, like you said, how the house will be shared, how the groceries will be shared, how the, you know, when we go on a trip, where is it coming from? So even if the bank accounts are not joint, it's still a mutual decision of some kind about what the division of responsibility is going to be. And so inside of that, I would say there are more decisions and more complications inside of a home that tries to perfectly divide their finances than there are in a home that has joint finances. There's reasons for both and there's preferences for both, but just objectively speaking, there tends to be more continual decisions and conversations that have to be made if you're trying to divide them than if they are joint.
Let's say I'm a person, I'm like, yeah, we got to get this under control. We got to look at these numbers. We have things we have to work towards. Too much of our money is going to the bank. And my husband, and this is such a stereotypical example, and this is not my case, but you know, he wants a bass boat. He wants a cabin up north. Like, that's what his goal is. Independence and incentive. How do you do it in that situation?
Yeah. So one of the things I love to do, I used to do coaching calls on a Zoom call with clients, and 99.9% of the time it was a woman. And my favorite calls were when I could see the husband lurking in the background, kind of listening, but like didn't want to be interested, right? And then the more I talked, the closer he would come. And every time they would decide to sit down, I was like, yes, I got them. Because that is totally true, is the idea that we're going to clean up our money in a couple, there tends to be a saver and a spender, right? Mm. One person who is more prone, more risk averse. And so they want money in savings, and one person who is YOLO. Like, if we don't spend it now, we're not living, right? And so these people tend to be in one couple, and then they have these combating personalities, combating priorities. So for example, the guy who has all the hobbies, but they also have all these payments. What I like to say is you could have even more hobbies if you did not have debt. You could have more money available for this if you took a very, very short amount of time to first clean up what happened in the past, buying a boat, for example. All boat purchases are not the same. There are very unwise ways to purchase a boat, and there are very wise ways to purchase a boat. And there are ways to purchase a boat that is hard on your marriage and difficult on your financial future. And there are ways to buy a boat that are not hard on your marriage and that don't take away from your financial future. So the way in which we go about these is what matters. And by cleaning up what the current situation is, we open doors. And so that's the thing I like to tell people all the time is I want to open financial doors for you. And there's a few things we need to do first in order to get those doors to be open. So for the person who wants all of those hobbies and wants the options, a lot of times what needs to be expressed, but is sometimes not spoken, is that they have all the hobbies, they have all the toys, their garage is full of the jet ski and the truck and the trailer, because one thing cascades into the other and there's never just one. And what happens is that person might love being on the lake, but then they come home and they spend a month being very stressed about their financial situation and feeling like they have to work constantly in order for that one weekend a month on the lake. And I tell them, I'm like, I promise there are actually ways to enjoy the lake and enjoy being at home and not have that stress. And so it is challenging in a couple when you have one person that's like, yep, let's clean this up, I want to put money in savings, and one person who is naturally prone to pull away from any sort of boundary or restriction at all. And so we really have to, the more they're resistant to it, the more we need to lean into clarifying what becomes available to them, what doors get open to them by doing this. And so a lot of times couples, or, you know, a woman will come to me and be stressed and say, I keep making a budget and my husband doesn't stick to it. And I say, like, what incentive does he have to stick to it? And a lot of times they can't come up with a reason. There is no incentive to stick to it. So I'm like, you know what? I actually wouldn't stick to that either. And sometimes that's what we need to realize, is by bringing them in and showing them what options can increase, then they can start to say, like, oh, okay, if we make these changes for 6 months, then that thing that I thought was totally out of reach becomes in reach. And so it is difficult, it is challenging, but it really does take positioning the motivating factor, whatever, you know, dangle the carrot of, this is the thing that you're saying that you want, that you don't think at our salary we could ever afford. If we do X, Y, and Z, we can afford that in 5 years instead of 25 years.
I still wonder about walking into Target.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of lose my mind when I walk into Target, because, oh, we need this, we need that, we have to have this thing. Talk to me at the threshold of Target, Carly.
Yeah. So one thing to think about is that our kids experience that feeling a lot more than we do, actually, all the time. And we're constantly almost exasperated by, like, you just need to wait. Right? Like if we're saying, you know, they're like, mom, open the snack. And you're doing something, you know, you're changing the baby's diaper or whatever. And you're like, can you just wait? Like, nothing's bad. You know, I've told my boys that all the time, nothing bad is going to happen to you if you wait for 5 minutes. But we have in our heads, like, if it's either now or never. And so if I don't do it now, something bad is going to happen. That's the feeling that they have, right? So in adulthood, we experience it in more palatable ways, but it's actually the exact same feeling. It's this feeling of, I'm going to either miss out or be judged or have a slightly less enjoyable time than I would have if I bought this. Therefore, I must buy it. I must get it, right?
Plus, so, also, if I don't buy it now when it's on sale, even though I don't really need it yet, if I wait until I need it, it's going to cost more. So I'm actually saving money by buying this thing that I saw at Target that I didn't know I needed until I saw it here in Target.
Yep. So one thing about Target specifically is that I like to remind people and remind myself, they spend billions of dollars a year trying to figure out how people work, how their brains are wired, in order to maximize how much we will spend in the store. Every single thing we see in Target is specifically designed with the sole intention of getting us to spend as much as we possibly can.
And to be clear, we're not ripping on Target specifically. It's
no.
Target, it's Amazon, it's every single store you encounter. All
because every corporation is designed to maximize profit. Like, that is their goal. I own a business. Our goal is to maximize profit, right? But what we don't realize is that they're so good at it that it feels like our idea to buy that thing.
Mm.
So they're so good at creating this problem we didn't know we had, that we're like, Target didn't tell me I needed to buy this. I decided that I need to buy this. And that is not the case. So when we can recognize there might be a factor outside of my own head that is helping me believe something that's actually not true, then we can start to say, okay, maybe target marketing is just really good today. And so I'm going to pull one over. Like that's another thing for me, and everybody's wired differently. I am personally challenged. I'm very competitive against myself. And so the idea that I can walk in and like, you know, I'm going to walk in and I'm going to only buy what's on my list just to spite these marketing people, right? It's actually fun. Like that is kind of a fun thing for me, is to say they wanted me to buy things I didn't need. And I actually just bought what was on my list. But okay, back to the threshold of target. So that is an important thing just to be aware of, right? Just having that idea in our head that I'm going to see things and I'm going to be drawn to buy them simply because somebody out there is really good at their job. And that's great. I'm glad that they're really good at their job, but it doesn't need to financially impact me. And so when we walk around and we do things like that, then we can recognize sometimes I do need to buy something and sometimes I don't need to buy something. So with the sales, for example, just like with marketing, where they're doing that in order to maximize the sales, when a Black Friday sale comes, when you get an email that says 50% off, the company is actually not incentivized to only do that once. They're going to do it once a month, once every other mm-hmm. week. They're going to constantly bring the sales around because it profits them. It benefits them to bring that around. So I own a business, I run sales, I run things like that. There's two things that we look at, is scarcity and urgency. How scarce can I make it feel? Because someone will buy something if they feel like it's running out. And how urgent can I make it? How much can I put them on a time crunch so that they have to make a decision? So that is the scarcity and urgency. Those are the two main principles that get people off the fence in order to make a purchase. And so I can recognize, you know, and something that has helped me is now being in a business and trying to learn about some of these business principles is to look back and see all the times that I myself was influenced by these things. The urgency, like for example, the urgency of Black Friday. And so we buy, or we don't buy, and then we immediately get an email and it's the urgency of Cyber Monday. That's just 2 days later, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so then we buy because it feels urgent. So recognizing that something can feel urgent or scarce without actually being urgent or scarce is a helpful thing in our purchasing, to recognize I can walk away from this and it will go on sale within the next 2 weeks, for example. The other thing is, you know, as we talk about recognizing ourselves, recognizing what we're prone to, for a period of time, I decided I will not physically walk into Target. I will do drive-ups. I will do online orders. I will still shop at Target because they have the diapers I like and they have whatever, but I'm just for a short period of time, I'm going to decide, you know, a 30-day window where I'm going to give myself a reset button. I'm not going to say I'm never walking into Target again because I feel capable of learning how to wisely walk around Target. I just am not doing it yet. So I had a window of time where I was like, I will do drive-ups and pickups and shipping orders. I will not physically walk into the store. And nothing bad happened. Here I am all these years later, right? Everything's fine. But we do feel like we're going to miss something. And sometimes we just need a little bit of a real world, physical, tangible experience that it was okay, that we walked yeah. away and it was fine. And sometimes we're just so caught up in the fear of missing out that we never even give ourselves the little bit of time to experience that real thing. Now I can say, you know, 8 years later, after I've been consistently budgeting and figuring out what I wanted to do with my money, it does get easier because now, you know, even I hope people can hear in these conversations that I am like, oh, well, I've recognized that this is at play in my purchasing. And so I've changed my mind. That is not always how I was. And so I had to learn through these small tangible experiences that helped me to see, okay, I can delete shopping apps off my phone the weekend of Black Friday, re-download them next week. And like I said, nothing bad
happens.
Whoa,
that's
a
really good idea.
I did not actually miss anything. Yep. Mm-hmm. Delete the email app so that you're not getting, I mean, I have never received more emails than the weekend of Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
Oh my gosh. Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, Giving Tuesday. I have nothing left, people.
Yep. Yeah. And so identifying, like Janet, what you said, I'm on the threshold of Target. Maybe we actually need to take that out of the box approach and say, maybe I need to not be on the threshold of Target. Yeah. Right. And so everybody has a different thing. If it's Amazon, one thing I like to tell people is add it to your cart and decide one day a week that you're actually going to purchase. So you let the cart build up during the week.
Like
if you say Fridays are the day that I'm going to press order. a lot of times, if we look through that list of things, we're like, I don't need that. Why did I put that in the cart? But we have to give ourselves just a little bit of time between when we feel the urge to buy it and when we actually buy it, because what we'll find is that we often change our minds or the moment passed, right? Like a lot of time, especially moms and when the kids are little, we operate out of so much stress because we're so overwhelmed that we are grasping at straws. We're like, I will do anything to get them to nap, to get them to eat a vegetable. And so what we do is we often have these knee-jerk purchases where we're like, oh, somebody on Instagram, some influencer told me that her kids eat broccoli because it's in this plate. I'm going to order four of them immediately, right? Lo and behold, the kid does not eat broccoli, right? Because we don't have the same kid. But we have those strong urges to solve these problems as quickly as we can. And we sometimes convince ourselves that solving the problem is at any cost necessary is better than the financial mess that we already feel.
Full confession. Obviously, my kids are not my they are my major stress, but my stupid dog has been waking up in the middle of the night, and then at 5:30 she wants to play and I don't want to. And I'm out with the dogs this morning, Carly. And I actually thought, I'm like, you know, they have those self-throwing dog toy things and they're hundreds of dollars. Like, I can throw a ball for my dog, but you know, if I could send her outside at 5:30 in the morning and she would amuse herself, it might be worth it.
Yeah,
I get it. Like, this is how your brain works. I did not put it in my Amazon cart. I don't think that's really the way to go, but I considered it.
Yeah. I mean, I just did it this week. We just transitioned Ruby, my daughter, who's almost three, from a crib to a toddler bed. And the sleep is like non-existent, right? Like, she is up and out and knocking on the door and all that stuff. And I did it. I ordered a different kind of baby gate, and I ordered the knob thing that, you know, like the adult can open, but the kids can't. It made it worse. She can't open the door, but now because she can't open the door, she pounds on the door instead of just calling out to us. Right. And so it,
my heart goes out to you. I had one of those and it was horrible.
And you just want sleep. I mean, sleep is one of those things where it truly is. Genuinely, I will do anything to sleep, right?
I think in this whole conversation is peer pressure as well.
Yes.
Especially for young moms. I just want to tell young moms, like, you don't need all that stuff. You absolutely don't need all that stuff. So it's okay to go to the used clothing store because your child is going to wear that shirt for approximately 2 weeks before they grow out of it. And so I think there's also like that whole, you're talking the sphere of influence. It's like that whole world out there, all Instagram, social media telling you, you need this special plate to put the broccoli on and they'll eat it.
Then you're a good mom.
Oh, exactly. Yep. That will wash out
the Pinterest mom, the Pinterest crafts and the pancakes that are in shapes and all that.
Yeah. So too, along with everything you're saying, which is all so brilliant, it's okay to take a different path. It's okay to not have that sparkly new whatever, stroller, backpack, all the things. It's okay. And we have to teach our kids too, as they grow, that actually it's okay not to have the latest, greatest thing, because that is also teaching them as they get older, I got to have that thing. If I only have that thing, then I'm going to be okay. Or, you know, my friends will like me. So, I mean, this is such a complex arena. Yeah.
And I think sometimes as we have kids, then we start to become a little more introspective and realize, ooh, I have some thoughts about money and some behaviors around money that I don't want to pass on to them, right? Like that I'm operating this way about every time I see a purchase, I go ahead and buy it, but I don't want them to do that. And I get frustrated when they say that they want me to do that, right? Like, oh, I came home from school and so-and-so has this video game. Can you order it? And I'm like, that's $60. I'm not ordering that, right? And so we get frustrated with them. But at the same time, if I'm honest with myself, I behave that way with my own money sometimes too. And so it can be a helpful realization of, if I work on some of these mindsets that I have that I don't think are serving my family, that will not only benefit me, it will benefit my kids. Mm-hmm. And part of the reality is that of that, and in the moment, it can, again, be a hard pill to swallow, but if I want a different result than I have been getting, my life is gonna have to look different. Like they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I can't spend exactly the same way as I have been and expect it to suddenly result in a bank account that's full of cash and a retirement that's funded. That's just not how it's going to work.
That is depressing.
I know. only it were true. If only I could be a budget genie instead of a budget assistant, right?
Obviously, money and family finance, it is a big topic. It's a huge topic. It affects every aspect of our lives. It affects us every day, whether we choose to think about it consciously or not. Carly, you have your own podcast. Tell us about that, because people are going to want to hear more, I think.
Yeah. So it's called the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. And what we do is we have a wide variety between interviewing other experts. That's actually what we do the least often. The most frequently thing, most frequent type of episode we have is someone who is a follower either on Instagram or a listener on the podcast who wants to talk about something that they're currently going through with their finances. Mm-hmm. And so we can dialogue together. We can problem solve. Like I said before, we can have those out, those other perspectives so that we can say, hey, have you tried this before? Because what I know to be true is that whatever struggle or problem they're having, someone else is also having
Absolutely.
That. And so that's what the podcast does, is I have women come on and share things. Like I said, sometimes it's success stories where they're going to share something that happened that is a positive. And occasionally it'll be a standalone episode of myself or of another expert. But the bulk of what we do is just have normal women just like me and you come on and express something that they are working through and that we can work through together with their finances so that they can achieve those things that they're looking for. So yeah, it's called the Debt-Free Mom Podcast, and it's anywhere you listen to podcasts and on YouTube.
And I just followed Carly on Instagram at Debt-Free Mom. You can find her there too. Thank you so much for joining us today. You have made this sound doable, sound, I'm not all the way to fun, but exciting, exciting. What do you think, Janet?
Exciting and interesting, and definitely a different perspective that I think can be so valuable. So thank you for all you're doing in the world to help us move towards, you know, more relaxed parenting and just feeling better about our future and feeling more secure. So thank you, Carly, so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My hope is that when people listen, it's not that they go and today all of their problems are solved. My hope is to plant a little bug in their ear that, like, maybe there is a different way that would feel better and that is manageable, again, inside my circle of influence, in whatever kids I have, job I have, that there would be a path forward.
Listeners, this may be an episode you want to save and listen to it again. This was jam-packed with great insights and ideas. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast, and we are your co-hosts, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks always for being our listeners and supporting our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.